Good morning, if you're listening to News Radio 930 WFMD, and good whatever time of day it is, if you're listening to the podcast via stream on some other day or time of the week. This is The Faith Debate. I'm Troy Skinner. You can find me online at WFMD.com and also at householdoffaithinchrist.com. That second one is probably the best one as far as overarching, because you can connect with everything that me and my church are involved with, including The Faith Debate, through that one hub, that central location of householdoffaithinchrist.com. But if you're only interested in keeping up on The Faith Debate show, well, certainly WFMD.com is a good place to go for that and all the other things on this radio station. I wouldn't want to discourage you from checking that out either. Daniel Razvi and Imran Razvi are back on the panel. I keep trying to chase them away, but they put up with me. So I haven't found a way to chase them away. I'm being as rude and obnoxious as I know how, and they love me anyway. That's the kind of guys they are. You can find them online at conqueredbylove.org. See, they've been conquered by love. That's why they put up with a guy like me. And they co-pastor a church in the Thurmont area, and it's called the Church That Meets at Imran's, although I'm going to playfully maybe start calling it the Church That Meets at Daniel's Father's House.
That's so, right.
Last week, if you were listening to the show, we were talking about marriage because we pivoted into talking about marriage after bringing up the Defense of Marriage Act on the previous week's show. And we didn't finish all the thoughts that I was hoping to touch on. There's at least two or three more. And
In the context of if your church teaches this or your pastor teaches this, it's either an up or down, like you should attend or not to attend.
Right. This is all within the larger umbrella. The last several weeks we've been talking about, you know, what defines Christianity, or more specifically, what defines a biblically faithful Christian church, and the kinds of questions you should be asking of a church if you're thinking about joining. Or if you're already attending a church, you're like, well, I don't know where my church stands on some of this stuff. Start finding out, and maybe you'll be surprised. Hopefully you won't be. So at the end, I kind of threw out, as we ran out of time, the idea about being unequally yoked. Do you guys have anything more you wanted to say about that, or should we move on to something else?
No, I mean, just don't get discouraged if you find yourself already married and then you're realizing this whole unequally yoked thing. There are some passages that really describe, you know, what you should do and how you should act with that, and I think Corinthians talks a lot about that, and here's the steps to take, and strive, if at all possible, to stay together. So we're not trying to break up a marriage because of that. But going into a marriage, you should be very confident that you are of the same faith.
And unequally yoked, maybe we should define what we're talking about. That's kind of Christianese, right? Christian Bible readers and Christian people would know.
Or farmers.
And farmers. In today's age, I'm not even sure if they know. Right, but once upon a time, farmers, they would know, because they'd have the team of oxen plowing the fields and stuff. And if you had one big, strong, healthy ox and one that wasn't doing the job, they weren't good partners.
No, they go in circles. They would not go straight because they can't pull the same weight.
They would not navigate the field well. Well, it's the same thing in marriage. So spiritually, the most important thing is to make sure that, you know, if one spouse is a Christian, well, the other one better be, or they're going to be unequally yoked, and it's going to, their life path will be circular. It won't be linear. It won't go forward. It won't. But it's not just that. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a pastoral counseling kind of a show necessarily, but there are other things. Like, you guys are financial planners. That's your advisors, right? That's what you do for a living. That's an important thing, to have similar ideas about what financial situations should look like. Like, if one's, you know, wants to buy all the fanciest stuff, and the other person, they have the means for it, but they prefer to buy all the generic stuff, that's going to be a source of problem. You want to make sure you can work that out before you're 2 years into your marriage and you're just at each other's throats all the time. You know, a big one is, you know, how many kids do you want to have? You know, if one wants to have 17 kids and the other one doesn't want to have any, well, that's going to be a source of constant tension and trouble in your marriage. You need to figure those things out maybe before you get hitched.
I would say, if you're young and of childbearing years and you don't have some significant health issue, not wanting to have kids is probably not a biblical desire. It's probably not a God-honoring desire.
And I think that would be a tell for, let's say it's the woman doesn't want, I'm just saying because we're men, right? Let's say the woman doesn't want to have any children. That's a tell, like, what else is going on there, right? What's going on in that heart? Because you're right, that's particularly women, I think, should want to have children. But even men, they want to have descendants and have their name live on, their last name carry on.
It's reasonable to have in your head a desire of, oh, I think this number might be nice. I think ultimately God should be deciding the size of your family, but I don't think it's reasonable to go into a marriage with the plan that we are never going to have kids. It's just not going to be an option. It's not on the table. God should be the one choosing that. And in fact, the whole purpose, one of the main purposes of marriage is to propagate the species, to be fruitful and multiply. So that is kind of important.
And go ahead. You were leaving.
I would go one step further. If one of the potential spouses says, hey, I want to send my kids to public school. You know, that could be a very big problem, especially in these days. I don't think public school, even most private schools, have a biblical worldview. And what you're doing is throwing your kids to the wolves, where your responsibility is to make sure that you're protecting and training them.
Yeah. So if you're, thinking about getting engaged, or you're engaged and you have had some conversations about these things, I would encourage you. They're bigger. Classically, it's which way does the toilet paper roll go? Over or under? Where do you squeeze the toothpaste tooth, in the middle or the bottom? Those are annoyance, pet peeve kinds of things. You can work through those, unless you are looking for excuses to not work through things. But these worldview kinds of questions, mm-hmm. these major life decision questions, they can be a problem. And somebody, they might change their mind. Like you brought up this, the schooling. Somebody might be totally opposed to homeschooling, but over time, they change their mind. But in the meantime, you've been married 8, 10, 12, 15 years during the childbearing portion of your marriage, and your kids are now going to school. By the time that person changes their mind, there's all this baggage that you have to work through. What are some other ones? I mean, we don't have to get into it, but I guess since I'm on this train of thought, how do you guys, I'll ask it this way, how do you guys, when you're approached as pastor, somebody's thinking about getting married, and they're like, how will I know if I'm sexually compatible? Because hopefully they're good Christians and they haven't had any sex. What kind of response do you give to that
question? Are you a man and she's a woman? You're compatible. I mean, it's true. I mean, you can look at all these secular guides and determine, oh, I think this will be better. Well, no. God designed one man, one woman. If this is who God has for you, then this is the perfect person for you. And there's a lot of there's a lot of learning and experiential things that can happen, but you experience it together. You're not trying out lots of different other wives before you choose your wife. It's just not the biblical way. And so I don't really care if the world says that you need to be trying out a lot of different things before you get married. It doesn't matter. Even if you could scientifically prove that that makes you happier or more pleasured or whatever, too bad. Because God commands it this way. So that's what I would say to that, is you start with what God desires, and he will make it such that there is a compatibility there. The compatibility really comes from you both desiring to love each other and starting with a desire to love, not being in love necessarily, but to choose to love each other. And that's where it comes from, and growing in that direction.
And politics can be important too, particularly if each partner is hardcore. If one doesn't really care that much about politics, it's not as big an issue, I would imagine. But you don't want to have a hardcore leftist and a hardcore conservative getting married. They're going to be at each other's throats all the time. So that would be something else to think of. So, money matters, political, biblical worldview things.
And family relationships also.
Size of family, yeah, that's true.
To me, a big red flag would be look at the relationship the person has with their family, their parents, especially if they're younger, their siblings, their cousins. If they don't get along with any of their family members, then that should be a major red flag, right?
And for Daniel personally, if the spouse doesn't like guns, then that's a big no-no.
Well, areas of interest can be important too. They're more secondary, but mm-hmm. Yeah, one person likes to golf, the other person hates the outdoors. One person likes to go on nature hikes and go fishing and hunting, and the other person would rather be needle pointing and reading a book. Like, being able to spend time together naturally can be important, but you can work through those things relatively easily.
But I mean, you bring up the guns thing, that does play into your ideas and expectations of the role of the husband as a provider and protector, which we talked about last week, protector. And many Christians would be of the opinion that the husband should defend his wife from any sort of attack physically as well as spiritually. And if somebody's coming in to rape her or to kill her, then he should kill the person that's doing that. And then there's a whole branch of Christianity, several large denominations, that are very much of, we should not fight back for any reason, even if they kill us, even if they kill our wives and kids in front of us. And there, while I don't hold to that doctrine, I know there are some very well thought out reasons behind that doctrine, and you should definitely discuss your opinions on that and probably have similar opinions on that doctrine before you get married, because you don't want to come in, you don't want a wife expecting her husband's going to be defending her physically and then he's not, but because he has some valid biblical reason that he thinks that's there, that should be discussed beforehand, right? And not to make that doctrine invalid, because I think that may be one of the more secondary issues if you've really thought about it and argued through it, which maybe we'll have somebody on the show discuss that at some point.
Yeah, but you're talking about somebody you know that might join the show in the not-too-distant future that could talk about some of those things, maybe, if he's willing. Well, let's say you don't have these conversations. You don't figure this out. You don't do a good job vetting the other person. And now here you are years later, and you want to get divorced.
Too bad. Not allowed. The Bible, there's different doctrines that different churches teach on divorce, and there's a few different ones that I think have some biblical valid foundation. One that would not be is that you can get divorced for any reason you want, or just get divorced and remarried for any reason. There are churches that teach you should not get divorced at all, no matter what the reason is, you're not allowed to ever get divorced. And if by chance you got divorced before you got saved, you definitely can't get remarried again. And then there's other churches that will say, well, it's acceptable to divorce and maybe even to remarry in certain circumstances, specifically if there was adultery. Those would be either one of those two schools of thought I'm very sympathetic to. I think you can have a good biblical basis for those arguments. But
what about, hey, I was divorced and I got remarried and God forgives all, he forgives sins, and I'm repenting, and now I'm going to try it again. And if I sin and divorce again, you know, God will forgive my sin anyways.
I mean, the Bible says don't be divorced except in specific circumstances. And the
two exceptions that are talked about in the New Testament would be adultery as one, and abandonment of the marriage would be another reason why. And particularly in that context, if the woman was abandoned, she had no provider, and so she needed a husband so she could eat. You know, so that was probably part of it.
But what about abuse?
So I think abuse is grounds for separation for sure. I don't think God commands a wife to stay with an abusive husband, but that doesn't mean she gets to go divorce and remarry somebody.
And I think this is where pastoral care becomes a big thing. That, you know, I think generically or academically, or you know, in a conversation like a faith debate, it's easy to say, you know, this is what it is. But then there's the difficult real life situations you have to help somebody navigate, and it's really messy and it's complicated, and you're like, okay, we want to be biblical, but we also don't want to be unbiblical to the licentious side, right? The everything goes side, and you don't want to be unbiblical in the really hard legalistic, you know, immovable side either. You got it. And so the abuse, I had to weigh in once on a situation like that, and it really forced me to wrestle with it a little bit. And the way I kind of came down on it was, if in this case it happened to be the husband, women can abuse their husbands too, but in this case it was a husband abusing the wife. And the husband, I think if the abuse is unrepentant, ongoing, no light at the end of the tunnel, life maybe is in jeopardy kind of thing, I came to a place where I felt like that could be a way of defining abandonment, because he's abandoned the marriage of his role as husband. He's supposed to be the protector, but he's the abuser. He's supposed to provide safety and security and a good life for his wife, and he's doing the exact opposite. They're still living in the same house together, but they're no longer married. He's abandoned
his role
in the relationship, and so... One, practically, yes, save your life and save your kids' lives, get out. And two, I don't think because he's completely insane in sin that you should be forced to raise your kids alone for the rest of your lives. I think that you have biblical grounds for divorce, and we can navigate what that looks like for you moving forward. But I think, and so that's how I came down on that one. That's why when you said it's not
but
allowed, I was like,
then there's different
well,
definitions.
Then you and I would disagree with the advice I gave somebody on that one.
There may be a difference between separation, which I think every pastor should definitely. Agree with. You should not be forced to stay with somebody who is putting your life in danger, right? But whether that means, and of course that probably will lead to divorce. He's going to divorce you probably if you leave him. But the question is then, can you remarry? And there's different opinions on that, and that's something I think that's reasonable to have a conversation. But then the question will come up: well, what qualifies as abuse? Is physical abuse the only kind of abuse? What about mental abuse and emotional abuse and manipulation and this and that? And that's.
I'm not trying to say
there's definitely traumatic things that can happen, but you want to be very careful and not run into what the abortion people like to say. Well, it was the life of the mother. No, it was the health of the mother. It was their emotional well-being of the mother. Yeah. We killed the baby, right? So, for my emotional and mental sanity, I had to divorce him. I'm not trying to discount real, awful, traumatic. Experiences, but you want to be very careful, I would say, as a pastor before you just give a blank check to say, oh yeah, you were emotionally manipulated and abused that way.
Yeah, everybody could make an argument they're abused by the way things get defined these days, right? Somebody calls you a bad name. He abused me. He called me a name and hurt my feelings and made me feel unsafe. He violated my safe space. So I'm not talking about that. That's why, again, the pastoral care is so important. Really getting involved, knowing right. The situation. And, I don't know if this is the best rule of thumb, but kind of a rubric for me is, if I was giving the advice to my son or my daughter, what advice would I give? And if I had reason to think my daughter's life was in jeopardy.
Oh, sure.
Or my grandkid's life was in jeopardy, my advice is, you know what?
Get out.
Get out. And, and if you need to rebuild your life, and part of that means moving forward as a divorcee, we can talk about that. But first get out, and then we'll figure it out.
Right.
And if she ends up...
I agree with that.
And I would give, probably in that situation, like the person's completely unrepentant, why should a 25-year-old woman have to spend the rest of her life trying to raise her kids on her own because she's got a psychotic husband?
You just got to be careful because,
I feel like compassion has to come in.
Because so many people who are divorced would say that their spouse is psychotic now, these days, when right. It really was just things like they didn't discuss these worldview ideas before they got married, and they didn't
is, though, of course, in this, and this is where it gets, and I don't want to give the impression I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. I'm trying to give a broad picture here. Ultimately, I think what I would say to that young woman, though, is... You made a covenant, you went eyes wide open, you should have anyway, and it ended up being a horrible mistake, but you still made a covenant. So you can move on, you can be separated, and you can behave as though you're not married anymore, but in God's eyes, you're still technically married. And so if you go and marry somebody else, even though you're divorced, he's still alive until the day that he dies. You shouldn't remarry because then you're kind of committing adultery against the original covenant you made before God, even though he's a jerk. And I know that's a hard stance to take, but I think if you get, for me anyway, if you get there by saying, Bill Clinton, I've mentioned him 3 times in the last couple of weeks, I feel your pain. but if you can get to understand, I'm feeling your pain. I'm just not being hard to be hard. I get it. But still, you want to be obedient. And so this is God's plan for your life. This is the path he's got you on. It's a hard road. But that's probably where I would end up after saying all those other things.
It's like, well, I don't love him anymore. Or a husband could say, well, I just don't love my wife.
And I would argue that usually what's happened these days is that I just don't have the feelings for them anymore. And that's why people get divorced. But the main thing is your purpose on earth to be happy? And that
does God want you to be happy?
Yeah. And a lot of pastors say, God wants you to be happy. He wants you to have all the things that you should have, and you should be happy, and you should be happy. And even kids will say, Mom and Dad, don't you want me to be happy? I want to live with my boyfriend. I want to live with my girlfriend. Don't you want me to be happy? No.
That's the main reason that what Daniel was talking about earlier, the people they're of childbearing years, their age, and they're married, they should be being fruitful and multiplying, but they don't want to have kids. That's why, right? It'll interfere with their perceived happiness. I want to be able to go on vacation when I want. I want to be able to spend all my money on myself. I don't want to have to take care of kids.
And the proper argument to fight back against that is not to say, to point out all the reasons that kids would actually make them happy and they're wrong about this and they really will be happy. The argument is, who cares if you're happy? You need to follow God. And you should be fulfilled and joyful, and you will learn to be joyful in all things that God has for you, but it needs to come from a place of desiring what God wants for you. And, you know, I know you had some things you wanted to say about kinism or something like
that.
Yeah,
but so. It occurs to me, you know, we're Protestants and we have a tendency to think of things only from a Protestant point of view, but there might be a stray Roman Catholic who's listening. Roman Catholics, they have a position on marriage and divorce and separation and stuff, and they have a practice that's called annulment. Mm-hmm. And they will basically go back in time and say, well, you know, that covenant you thought you made, you didn't actually make it. You were never actually married, so you don't have to get divorced because you were never really married. Do you guys have any passing thoughts on that?
Absolutely unbiblical. The only time you can go back and change a vow is if a husband hears his wife's vow for the first time that day, he can change and cancel that vow. That's the only time in the Bible that says that.
Or if she's not married, if her father... So you could make the argument that these two people eloped and they didn't have the father's permission. The first time he hears about it, immediately he could annul the marriage. I think that may be a biblical case you could make. But only the father of the bride could do that, and not the husband. He can't annul it, or the father's husband or the father, that can't be annulled. And there's traditionally annulment would only be if the marriage was not consummated. So they could say, well, they didn't complete the act of being married, and so it didn't really happen whether they made vows or not. Honestly, the practice of making like outward vows in a certain order, like I promise to do this and this and this, biblically what you do is the parents agree, the families agree, and then you take her into your tent and you're married. Like that's the, but the whole it came with that consummation.
And the taking into the consummation part, taking into the tent, is really important because, you know, the covenants in the Bible, it would be referred to as you cut a covenant. Well, what does that mean? Cut, it's a blood covenant. And so, not to get too descriptive and graphic here, but if the woman has preserved herself for her wedding night, you know, the consummation, it makes it a blood covenant. Mm-hmm. And so that's an important aspect to the, you know, to the vows then being finalized. That's an important thing. Now, in today's world, where I don't know how many people getting married are still virgins anymore, but...
They're not. They're all living together. They don't have any desire to get married. I mean,
talk about that real quick. What advice do you give to somebody? They come to you. They want you to officiate their wedding ceremony. They say they're believers, maybe even started visiting and attending your church, but they're living together. What do you say?
So they can't attend my church if they're living together and not married.
Yeah, so you have to separate. You made a mistake. Get right with God.
What if they're a friend that knows you and they they might not even claim to be staunch Christians, but they want to get married and they would like you to officiate.
So I would say, first of all, that it's not the job of a pastor to officiate a wedding. It's the job of the families to say that this wedding should happen, and I think the church should not be the one that's sanctifying the marriage. God is the one that sanctifies it.
The Catholic Church got involved many years later for the purposes of controlling marriage and getting money. It was not
so if you want me to give my blessing on your marriage as your pastor, well, you need to be showing me that you have fruit. So you need to be, you know, a member of my church in good standing. And I'm happy to bless you, but I'm only going to bless people that I'm seeing are outwardly at least showing fruit. And one of those would not be living together. So separation is the first thing. And we can talk about marriage someday if you want, but I need to see that you're actually living not in sin. And you've made a commitment to hold yourself for marriage, whether it's this person or somebody else, but it's going to be held for marriage. But just some random friend or whatever to officiate their wedding, no, I don't think that's the job of a pastor, and nor do I think that it should be.
It can be.
I mean,
the pastor is not prohibited from officiating the wedding.
But officiating I think officiating is a problem.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I think the church should not be officiating weddings. That was started by the Catholic Church and is not biblical. The priest or the pastor can certainly bless and give his blessing, saying, look, I'm so excited that God has created this union, but the families are the ones that negotiate and get involved in that wedding. And the two fathers agree that we're going to get married, and they make sure they get the kids' permission. Yeah, you think it's a good idea? Okay, I think so too. Now you're married.
All right, that's going to be the last word. This is the Faith Debate. That was Daniel Rasby. The other voice you heard was Imran Rasby. I'm Troy Skinner. This is the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. Find me online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. That's householdoffaithinchrist.com. Never actually got to the Kinnis question. We'll start next week's show with that. And then Daniel wants to talk about some
red flags,
right? Borderline red flags. You might want to talk to your churches about it before you commit to attending on a regular basis. So that's next week, 167 and a half hours from right now. God bless.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.